The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol. Negative Man. Elastigirl. Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Kaldao.
Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Yo, yo, yo. Welcome to this podcast that we call Waiting for Doom, which is the show for people who really like comics about the Doom Patrol, or people who like Australians, or people who like random niche podcasts.
Or people who like all of those things. I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks, and you can also find Wilfred, the Sentient Show Twitter account, which is at WFTpod.
And I'm Mike, and you can find me on Twitter at avantgarve, and you can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook, and all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com.
And we're also part of the Totally Bitchin' podcast network, Inner Circle Comics.
Yeah. So, hey, we're back to get our Doom on.
Yeah. And it's looking forward to this one.
Yeah. This is a special... If you like weirdness, get ready for some extra helping of weirdness.
Yeah. Well, if you've read these issues, these are the Grant Morrison ones, you know what's coming, and you know that things get pretty weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like he put the pedal to the metal in the weirdness tractor.
Yeah.
Anyway, Paul, shut up and tell me how your week in comics was.
Yeah, I read Airboy number one.
Now, was that?
It was incredibly inappropriate and lots of fun. For those of you who don't know, Airboy is a new Image number one, and it's written by James Robinson of Starman fame, and illustrated by a guy called Greg Hinkle, I've never heard of, but who is a major formidable talent.
Ooh.
And the comic is about them trying to make the comic.
Right.
So Greg Hinkle flies into San Francisco to meet with James Robinson. James Robinson is just always complaining how no one likes his stuff at DC, and everyone just remembers him as the guy who wrote Starman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really dark looking into the mirror stuff. And, you know, I've been a James Robinson fan for a long time. Mm. And, you know, this is some of the stuff that I've thought about his work at times. That, you know, why isn't it as good as it was in the 90s or, in the 2000s? And, yeah, this comic. And basically they go out on the town and end up taking lots of coke and accidentally taking heroin and
Right. Picking
up chicks together, and it gets really wrong, but it's hilarious.
Okay.
In such a not safe for work way. Yeah, I'm hooked on that. I think it's the best thing he's written at least since the Shade miniseries, which
wow.
And it's certainly the first time I've felt that he's really trod new ground.
Mm-hmm.
Since probably the late 80s,
maybe,
wow. Early 90s.
Also, may I just quickly say, good on you for picking up a single issue.
Oh, yeah. Well, the buzz on this one got to me, so
right. I
succumbed. And it was a pay week. So.
It always helps, yes.
What about you, Mike? What did you read?
Surprisingly, because some people online have said that I don't read nearly enough DC comics, Justice League 41 was so good.
Yeah.
It was, I'll admit I wasn't the biggest fan of Convergence, and I was quite keen for things to get back to the status quo. And man, Justice League 41, that delivered. Holy cow. I'm more excited about the Dark Side War than all of Convergence was. So pumped. So good.
Secret War.
Yeah. Well, Secret War's pretty good. I think Secret War's doing better than Convergence, just personally. And also the Omega Men first issue. I really enjoyed that.
Wow.
That was cool. What else was there? The third issue of the Phantom miniseries was really interesting in that, possible spoiler warning, we may have a woman Phantom.
What?
Yes. Yeah, I was kind of the same, but I thought, you know, it could work. And the way they've written it, it's going to work. Because for those who aren't aware, the Phantom, you know, Defender of the Jungle, has always been a role passed down through the generations in the family. And the female character in the comic, she is the last of the bloodline. So Lothar from the King's Watch series, he's kind of been acting in the role temporarily. He's always said, as soon as I find the next ascendant of the bloodline, I'm handing it over to them.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
Well, good on them. I hope that we never hear of anyone complaining about this.
True, yeah. But I was... And it's got one issue to go, and I was like, man, I can't wait to see how they do that. And then if they do end up bringing back something similar to King's Watch, with all these characters in one team again, going to have, for want of a better phrase, Lady Phantom. But we'll see. We'll see. Was very excited about that. So, yeah, another good week for comics.
Excellent.
Yes.
Is there a ticking I can hear?
Your ears tell no lies, so to speak. That is the ticking we can hear. And that's the Doom Clock.
Awesome. Tell no lies.
Hey, look, when people get to the weirdness of these issues, you know, talking ears will be the least of their worries. Okay, so looking at the numbers on the Doom Clock, the last Doom Patrol book we had was issue 22 of volume 5, known as the Given Clark era, which was cover dated July 2011, but went on sale May 4th, 2011, which means we've been without a Doom Patrol book for 4 years and 5 weeks now. However, much to our continued excitement, the last appearance of the Doom Patrol was only 2 weeks ago, with their one-panel appearance in the 8-page sneak peek for Justice League United, which is still available on Comixology, and it's been confirmed that that's the only way you can see it. It wasn't included in any of the other recent DC books. So, to get to Comixology now, kids, do it.
How are we ever going to get that signed?
Guess we're not. I guess we're not. And this week in Doom Patrol history, released in 2010, with the cover date of August 2010, was issue number 11 of Volume 5, also the Given Clark era. It cost a mere US $2.99. Remember when DC were holding the line at
$2.99? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, they do.
That lasted not very long.
Some of them are still $2.99. Some of them.
I guess they're not making that big a deal of it anymore, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the cover showed Robot Man and Negative Man taking on our favorite Animal Vegetable Mineral Man. And the story was titled Front and Center, and it showed us the rise of a new quote-unquote evil brotherhood as they made their first strike against a patrol, who then had to rescue Rita Farr, and they got a bit of help from someone called Ambush Bug.
Yeah.
I think there was a memorable scene in that issue where he accidentally teleported them into the men's room. Where
that's where they bumped into ABM.
Yes, and then the fight broke out in the men's room, and it was on then. Oh, I love that issue. It was great. Anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock this week. Okay, it's Doomsplaining time, and we're back on the Morrison run. So we're doing a sharp little three-issue arc, which runs from issue 31 to 33.
So on these issues, we're looking at covers by Simon Bisley, and they are crazy. It's all written by Grant Morrison, of course. The penciler is Richard Case, and the inker in every instance is Mr. John Nyberg. The colorist was Daniel Vozzo. The letterer, John Workman. And the editor was Art Young, and the executive editor was Dick Giordano, who's been involved with the Doom Patrol forever.
Mm-hmm. Lucky him.
Yeah. So these issues starts off, and there's a guy, and we introduce him, and he's like an Englishman who wears a trench coat and smokes. Who's that sound like?
Possibly John Constantine.
Yeah, this is what Grant Morrison did when he was told he couldn't use John Constantine. He just created a different version of John Constantine called Willoughby Kipling, who's a bit of a geezer, a bit of a smart ass. And he narrates most of these, all of these three issues, basically.
Yes. Yes.
So, which is handy because there is so much weirdness coming at you thick and fast, and Willoughby Kipling is the only one who knows the deal.
So, yes, thank God for his narration. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's in a bit of a, like a detective mode. Like, you know, he's sitting in a hotel room talking about the case and trying to find, he'd filled the room with clocks. Then suddenly three people turn up. People? Well, could you call them people? They've got planets for heads.
Yeah, well, they call themselves Fear the Sky. And yeah, they look like, yeah, people with, who looks like their heads have been chopped off and replaced by little planetoids. And there's blood covering the tops of their business suits.
Mm. Yeah, in brown suits. And they are agents of the Cult of the Unwritten Book.
Mm.
Yeah, and they're the problem for the next three issues. And they whip out their sickles, which look like question marks. Willoughby traps them in a Robert Louis Stevenson book.
Of course.
Of pictures by reading some child's verse.
Yeah.
And off we go onto this story.
That's just in the first three pages, by the way.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then we see there's a young guy walking down the street in a big coat, and he goes to his hotel room and gets changed, and he's covered in writing.
Mm.
Yes. And he's singing Downtown for some reason. And he's in Barcelona. So most of the action in this comic takes place in Barcelona.
Mm.
Yeah, it's been a while since you could say that, I reckon.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, usually it's Paris.
Usually, yeah.
Made up Paris. Anyway, and then we get a brief interlude with the Doom Patrol. And if you remember, the last story before this was the Going Underground one with Jane. And Cliff was not responsive at the end of that one.
Nope.
Brain in a jar, not working. Mm. And he wakes up and he's in a new body that Dr. Will Magnus, the man behind the Metal Men, has created for him. And it's a bit of a sleek black affair, isn't it?
Mm, it's seriously powered up. I mean, he can even smell the smoke from Magnus's pipe, you know. And he's saying he can actually feel the air from the ventilator on his face. So it's a definite upgrade from the old body.
Yeah. So we leave them immediately and cut back to Willoughby, who is doing a bit of summoning with paper cuts, and he summons a headless, well, a severed horse's head with a great big spike through the forehead.
Yep.
Who's Baphomet, who's appeared as Falada from the Grimm Brothers, the Goose Girl.
Yeah, of course.
Cut back to Cliff, who's looking at his old body on the slab. And he's been given a snow globe by Crazy Jane as a thank you for saving her in the last arc.
Yeah, I wonder where she got that from, actually. But that's important later. We won't worry about that for now.
Yeah, and Jane rushes in and gives him a big girly hug and then immediately screams because she's so embarrassed because it was baby doll in charge and not Jane. Back to Willoughby. And we're going to do a lot of this flipping back and forwards. And he gets the... what's going on from the horse? Directly from the horse's mouth, as it were. Yes, yep. A horse is a horse, of course. And no one can talk to a horse, of course. But the words of the horse are luminous doors, sagrada familiar. Doom an old knight, unmaker descending. Snowflakes and light, believe it or not, Chicken Little was right.
God.
It's crazy.
And actually, the horse does make sense later on.
That all makes sense for what's coming.
Yeah, much later.
Anyway, he whips out a sparkler, lights it, and draws a door in the air and walks through it and crashes in on Dorothy, who's doing her hair and fixing herself up.
She gets a bit of a surprise, yeah.
Anyway, cut back to Barcelona, and it's the hotel where this young guy with all the writing on him is holed up. We get the description of what's happening, and yes, the Cult of the Unwritten Book collects old love letters and when love turns sour, and they sew them all together with skin flakes and form the Dry Bachelors, who are like dudes in trench coats with hats and carry balloons and carry hammers.
Yeah, they look a bit like the DC hero The Question a little bit.
Yeah.
With their weird face and their fedoras and their
like
jackets.
A scabby face.
Yeah.
A scabby question.
And there's writing all over their coats, of course. Yeah. And the balloons have all got exclamation points on them.
Yeah.
Just because.
Anyway, back inside, the young bloke has had his shower. He's gotten dressed again. He goes out in the hall and he sees a kite flying up the corridor made from human skin and bone.
Mm. Of course. The mystery kites, they're called. Yes.
Yeah, another agent of the Cult of the Unwritten Book.
Mm.
So we find from the all the descriptions going on from Willoughby that they are after this guy.
Yes.
For some reason. And then we get kids on bikes on tricycles with gas masks who are winking, blinking and nod.
The Never Never Boys. Yeah.
And they go tearing along the walls and the ceiling of the hotel corridor. Yeah, then we cut back to the Doom Patrol headquarters where Willoughby is saying, it's the end of the world and you guys, I need your help.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. And he's constantly drinking and smoking throughout all these.
Constantly. He's never without a bottle.
Yeah. Back to Barcelona and the boy being chased has jumped out of a window and he's running through the street and the kites are after him. He's hiding, terrified. Then we see another guy in Barcelona who has a cut in his hand. And this is Emilio Cuervo. And yes, he's concerned about the cut. And there's all sorts of weird things going on. And then the Doom Patrol show up. And Willoughby says, well, you look like someone set your ass on fire. Need any help? End of issue.
Yeah, that's... What an opening in Doom Patrol 31. It's just... You're left with bizarre things like needle children who can't be seen through windows, you know, throwing rocks through windows, and writing appearing in the night sky, and some poor guy being forced to compose terrifying poetry, and everything blue becoming invisible. Yeah. And of course, the Doom Patrol show up just in time with Willoughby.
Yeah. And I mean, Grant Morrison is chucking out ideas left, right, and center in this, and they're just coming and going, like, you know. He's not hanging on to any of that. None of them are precious. He's got a billion other ideas in his head waiting to come out. So these can just come and go like that.
Mm.
And I just want to talk about the cover of this issue for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Simon Bisley got the script and did a completely different interpretation of The Dry Bachelors.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's very weird, but they're covered in bits of paper and old love letters. And one of them says, Karen, love you always, Simon. So I presume that's Simon Bisley talking to Karen Berger, who was like the Vertigo executive editor. But she was working at DC at the time before Vertigo existed.
Right, of course.
Yeah, shepherding titles like Sandman and things like that.
Cool. Okay, let's move on to issue 32, which... opens up immediately with even more weirdness.
More narration.
Mm.
Yes, so we hear about the Pale Police who get helmets and they meditate on the person they're going to kill. And then they ritually draw the thumbprint on the helmet and put it on their heads.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wearing an outfit which is basically... like some sort of spacesuit with a giant smile on the front.
Yeah, of course.
And their gun looks like it's put together from hair curlers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's very weird. And yeah. So we see that the Doom Patrol is now with this young guy, and Willoughby introduces the team. Mr. Steel, Crazy Jane, and then Rebus adds in Rebus. And Rebus.
And meanwhile, this poor guy, he has no idea whether or not to trust them at all.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, how can you prove you're not with the cult? And Willoughby says, because if we were, we'd have bloody filleted you by now, you little cretin.
But suddenly they're being attacked by the Hiroshima shadows, which are ghostly images of people flying through the air.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this because the Doom Patrol sweeps into action now and they go and fight. And, you know, Cliff's got, oh, I got new guns in my arm, and he's using them.
Yep.
And... you know, so the fight is on, but pretty much we've got Willoughby and the boy talking in the foreground the whole time. So it's like, you know, the fight's just there to be drawn by the artist. And, you know, Grant Morrison's really interested in the dialogue between these two as they're talking about a good place to hide.
Yeah.
So the fight is just really secondary to this. Mm. And this issue is called Decreator.
Mm.
Yeah. the Doom Patrol make short work of the Hiroshima Shadows, and they all go back to the hotel, where Willoughby starts trying to translate the boy's script on his body. Do they even name this boy?
From what we know, he's only ever referred to as the Book of the Fifth Window.
He's the Book of the Fifth Window.
We never know his real name. We only learn very little about his family and his life history before he's introduced in the previous issue. But yeah, even Willoughby just calls him the Book of the Fifth Window. And he has, you know, the Cult of the Unwritten Book has been waiting 2,000 years for the scripture on his body to appear. And
so they can translate it and summon the anti-god, the decreator. Yes,
of course, you know.
Which is, when God said, let there be light, and he created everything, there was a shadow behind him, and that became the decreator, according to this.
That's kind of logical, in a way.
Yeah.
You can see the twisted logic there.
But the agents of the cult are still looking for the Doom Patrol and the boy, and they've got the Shroud of Stilts, which look like giant hearts on sticks floating up the street. Weird. Willoughby has a way to find out. He knows that the cult will be coming into this world through a portal, and it's usually a gash or a cut on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's got some phone books soaking in some holy pop, which is 7-Up being blessed by a defrocked prince, priest.
Yep.
And that fades out all the names in the phone book except for the name of the person they're looking for.
Of course it does.
Which is Emilia Cuervo again.
Yes.
Yeah. They say, well, he's probably gone to La Sagrada Familia, which is the famous cathedral in Barcelona built by Antonio Gaudi.
Mm. Do you know what year construction began on that, Paul?
No, I don't, Mike.
Construction began on Sagrada Familia in 1882. Do you know when it's due to be completed?
No, it would be finished, wouldn't it?
Actually, no. Estimates seem to be that the anticipated completion will be sometime in 2026.
Oh, that's not long.
So they're taking their sweet time with it.
Wow. Yeah, Gaudi designed a pretty elaborate cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Alan Parsons Project did a whole album dedicated to it. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
Oh.
We're all learning so much tonight.
Wow. Anyway, so the Pale Police turn up and chase Emilio Cuervo, and they talk in anagrams, which is pretty fun.
Don't they just?
So they say, Rune, town hero. Things like that. And Hornuntor.
And I, a tough wee tray.
Yes, and I've got the translations. He says, nowhere to run, nowhere to run.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So that's what they translate as. Back to the hotel, and Willoughby's very concerned about the amount of alcohol he's got to get through this situation. He's so surly and, you know, just rude to them constantly, isn't he?
Yep.
Yeah. So he says, let's go find Emilio Cuervo, and he sends Cliff off to do that because apparently Cliff speaks a bit of Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more and more wackiness breaking out all over Barcelona, like a plague of bodiless mouths that sweep through, violently disagreeing with each other.
We've got someone called Whispering Jack haunting the houses of unmarried women, suggesting...
Is he doing lots of farewell concerts?
What's
an
the
endless
first?
Stream. Is he torturing people with an endless stream of farewell concerts?
Yeah, I kind of thought of him for a few minutes. For those who don't live in Australia and are listening to the show, there's a well-known singer called John Farnham, whose nickname is Whispering Jack, based on an album he released in the early 80s, I believe it was, which was called that. So when Paul and I saw Whispering Jack whispering, you know, indecent ingredients for unusual recipes to old women, I don't know about you, Paul, but I laughed out loud.
Yep.
It's a little bit creepy. Yeah.
Rebus and Kipling get on the streets because they've got to get some postcards, and apparently that's all made up because Willoughby just needs some more booze.
Yeah.
He's already got the postcards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. and we get a little bit of his backstory that he's part of a mystical offshoot of the medieval Knights Templar. Anyway, so he's just being rude. And then suddenly they're attacked by the Pale Police. Potts, TV mood, a potent totem. Which is, stop, do not attempt to move.
Yes.
And then spot, which is stop again. And then, yes, then Jane is in the hotel waiting with the book. And then suddenly razors start slashing through the walls, and it's sort of, what are they, razor nuns? What are they called?
The Little Sisters of Our Lady of the Razor.
Yeah, so they're like bandaged nuns with glowing eyes and razors in their hands.
Yes.
And the boy is freaking out. He's going, razors, they'll cut us to bits. And then we see that Jane has turned into Black Annis.
Black Annis. She says,
do you think I'm afraid of razors?
And you're like, yes, get on Black Annis.
Meanwhile, the Pale Police are shooting at Willoughby and Rebus and saying, oh, annoy, accept use. Why, thou sewery area? Which is, you cannot escape, stay where you are.
Of course it is.
Then they come up behind him and they go, King Lip, which is Kipling. Emu, we wail, deviant for toy ego, low. Okay. Which is, we've waited for you for a long time. Look. And then Rebus comes up in the energy form behind him and goes, this. Which is an anagram of a different word.
Shit.
And Rebus electrocutes the bastard.
I like how Rebus directly tells Kipling off. Because, you know, after Rebus has just saved Kipling, Kipling says, well, you bloody took your time, you bastard. And Rebus is like, Kipling, you are a shameless coward and I just saved your life.
Yes, when the Pale Policeman was attacking, he's making excuses and saying, I've got asthma, I'm on medication. Yeah. But he's got no shame about it. It's just like, yeah, that's what I do. He's saying, so what do you want, a kiss?
Yeah.
Anyway. Then we go to the cathedral, the freaky, never-finished cathedral.
Yeah.
And the gash is getting bigger in Emilio's hand. And then we cut to the hotel. A lot of action in this hotel. And Black Annis is fighting the razor nuns. And meanwhile, some green guys come through the window. They remind me a bit of the Creeper.
A little bit, yeah. A little bit, yeah. Oddly enough, we don't get any narration about those ones.
Yeah.
They just speak for themselves and say that they're creeping and they creep into the room.
Yes, and they smash the window and grab the boy, stick him in a bag, a potato bag, and carry him off.
Of course.
Yeah. And Jane realizes that they got away with him and she's a bit upset.
Just a bit.
Yeah. Meanwhile, at the cathedral, Cliff is confronting Emilio and he can't control the portal in his hand. It's getting bigger and bigger and Cliff gets sucked into this guy's hand, as you do.
That was the thing Willoughby was warning them about, is that the cult of the Unwritten Book teleport from their world into our world through a portal that develops from a gash in someone's body. And, you know, it starts out as just a simple cut, but then it keeps growing until that person is nothing but that portal. So goodbye, poor Emilio, I guess.
Yes. Cliff finds himself in their hidden city, which is called Nurnheim, and that hides in, you know, books and paintings, and it hides in old comics and things like that. So so it just moves around. It's very hard to find. And, yeah, they need to find it to stop the Decreator and the cult. But we see that Cliff is actually inside the snow globe, which is being held by Joshua.
Oh, it's all coming together.
Back at the Doom Patrol headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because the cult now have the boy, they have read him and translated. And Willoughby and Jane and Rebus go outside and see a giant eye in the sky, which is the Decreator. Mm. And also another Alan Parsons album.
Well played. And as Willoughby says, you know, Chicken Little was right, and the sky is falling. The sky literally cracking above them and falling to the ground.
Yeah.
It's all very creepy.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know if there's any other Alan Parsons albums in this, but we'll push on.
Okay. So. Issue 33 has probably one of my favourite covers of Bisley's work, where it's got Jane, Rebus, and Cliff in his new black armoured body, sort of standing there looking weird.
Badass.
Weird and badass, yes.
Jane looks mental, Rebus looks afraid.
He looks a bit worried, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know what Cliff's doing, but he's doing a very macho pose.
I think he's holding, not that we can really see it, the giant gun that he had on the cover of the previous issue.
Ah, right. Yes. So there's a bit of a loose connection between the outer cover and the inside of these books. A
little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, and the Decreator is, we open the book and we can see that the Decreator is already working. So words are disappearing from books and there's a guitarist on stage and his guitar's disappeared. And there's someone trying to commit suicide and they can't find any razor blades or pills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we get the narration by Willoughby and he describes it's the anti-god, the unmaker, Decreator. And he's smoking his cigarette and just telling the Doom Patrol about it, really matter of fact. And then his cigarette disappears and he gets really pissed off. He's going, bastard, how dare you steal my cigarettes?
Then when Rebus is asking, you know, how do they stop the Decreator, Willoughby basically says it's, you know, similar to a computer virus. You know, it just takes, you know, little by little, it takes little things out of existence. And that's what it's doing. It's annihilating the universe bit by bit. So it's hitting the fan now, gang.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and then we get the title page of the comic, which is Cliff about to enter some giant cathedral inside Nurnheim. And the title of the comic is The Puppet Theatre.
Mm.
Yes, and he gets confronted by some weird guys who look like sort of Ku Klux Klan people. It's that their hoods are their real heads,
yeah.
Perhaps. Yes, and it's time for Cliff to get beaten up.
Look, his body doesn't get that badly damaged. He does get knocked out and dragged away, but yeah, he's still essentially one piece. So maybe half a drink this time.
And we get told these are the Hoodmen and that they convert words into electricity and Mr. Steel took an entire phrase.
Ouch.
So they take Cliff through the streets in their sort of monster bone cart and take him to the puppet theater. And then we cut back to the Doom Patrol headquarters where Dorothy, Joshua and Chief are discussing the problems.
I love how Chief is just so matter of fact in this panel. You know, Dorothy's saying, what's happening, Professor? I feel kind of scared. And Chief's like, and well, you might be, Dorothy. If this data is correct, we could be looking at the end of the world. He's just so calm about it.
Yeah. And then the rest of the team in Barcelona on their way to the cathedral, Sagrada Familia.
Mm-hmm.
And they see that the wound is still there in place, but it's gotten so big that Emilio Curvo is no longer present and it's just all wound.
Yeah.
Which is kind of disturbing.
Just a bit, yeah.
Yeah. And things start to come out of the wound, which are the starving skins.
Yeah. They're gross.
They look like people's skin that have just been safety pinned together and they're carrying cutlery.
Mm.
Giant cutlery.
Yeah. Yuck. Yeah.
Anyway, fight scene. Yeah. And Cliff is being brought inside and he's found the boy who's in a cage and they've read him and all the words have disappeared off him. He's led away to meet the ones in charge, which are just puppets on a throne.
Yes, the Archons of Nurnheim appear to be almost like Punch and Judy type marionettes.
They are also holding puppets. So.
Yeah, the puppets holding puppets themselves.
Makes you wonder who's holding the strings of them, because we never do see.
We don't. We never know who's controlling them. And the male puppet essentially says, you know, we're discarded childhood toys that have grown bitter and deformed and are hungry for revenge. We're painted gods by whose powers existence itself is brought to an end. And it's like, okay, again, wacky and weird and scary, still a little bit of logic there, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then bashes the crap out of the Judy doll.
Yeah.
Punching Judy is very disturbing.
It is.
As a concept. Yeah, and particularly in this case, because the Judy doll ends up with blood all over her face and a cracked skull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Hmm. Anyway, Willoughby may have given up, but Jane has worked out how to stop the Decreator. And he said, it can't be stopped. I've told you a million bloody times. And she said, it's a vibration. You can cancel it out with a counter vibration. It's just wavelengths and frequencies. Yeah.
And basically, it turns out the Sagrada Familia is a gigantic tuning fork, which is, you know, how they're going to create the counter vibration, of course. I love how, once again, Jane has just managed to figure out the resolution to something, like she did when we first met her. You know, she knew how to fix problems before. And again, it's just like she just seems to know how to do stuff like this.
It's funny because, I mean, usually in fiction, you don't like this sort of solution from nowhere, but it works really well in the Doom Patrol. I don't know why.
Especially with Jane, because, you know, she's got so many forms that we've not seen before. So it's, you know, somewhat plausible that, of course, she's going to know how to do this stuff, you know.
Yeah. It's the deus ex machina, isn't it?
Yes.
So, yeah, everything. They set up a counter harmony and she turns into Lucy Fugue.
Hmm.
Yeah. Who looks like a sort of a see-through woman.
Yeah. You can see a skeleton, and she's kind of got a weird, clear, ectoplasmic body, almost.
Anyway, back in Nurnheim, Cliff is going to get a front row seat for the end of the world. He says, no way, and busts free, and he runs up the bell tower. And they yell, Bellmaster, stop him. And there's like this guy with a bird head, and he just goes, stop, please.
And Cliff just goes whack and knocks the guy, sends him flying to his death.
Well, he was very, you know, politely trying to stop him by saying please.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Cliff leaps off one of the higher landings and grabs onto the bell rope and starts ringing the bells. And then Joshua suddenly can hear that the bells are ringing inside the snow globe.
This was a weird yet awesome bit where, yeah, Cliff's ringing the bells in the cathedral in Nurnheim, and Joshua's in the Doom Patrol headquarters holding the snow globe, which has got the tiny city in it. And yeah, he can hear the bells, and he's going, it's here, my God, the bells are ringing inside the snow globe. What the hell?
Yeah. And he smashes the snow globe, and Cliff and the boy emerge. And then Cliff said, destroy the paperweight, or the snow globe, or depending on your preference.
Mm-hmm.
But Nurnheim has appeared inside the Doom Patrol headquarters and has started to grow. It's getting bigger. And then suddenly it disappears. It got decreated by the Decreator.
Of course it did.
Nicely wrapped up. So anticlimactic. And it's all over.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
So we see the Doom Patrol. They're all inside the Doom Patrol headquarters. And Willoughby explains that you can't stop the Decreator, you can just slow it down, and now it's slowed down so much that you won't even notice that things are disappearing. It'll just be like, you know, socks and pens the way they go missing.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, and the Chief wants to say, well, hang on a minute before you go, and Willoughby just puffs out some smoke and walks through it.
Yeah, he literally disappears in a puff of smoke.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent of the vanishing acts that Constantine did in the Swamp Thing book.
Mm. Yeah.
There's a great one where Constantine says to Alec, how do you baffle a vegetable? And Alec goes, I don't know. And then he turns around and he's gone.
Wow.
That's good stuff. Yeah. Anyway, so, but for some reason the Cliff's new body has offended the Chief, and he's like complaining about it incessantly.
Yeah, well, he's saying it's malfunctioning. It's like, you just saved the world.
Malfunction. Was there any malfunction in the comic?
No, there wasn't.
He said, it's typical of Dr. Magnus to spend a fortune on something that doesn't work properly. I could have made a better body out of Campbell's soup cans.
Wow.
Yeah. the last thing that is said in the book is as if the chief's going, that's odd. I seem to have misplaced my pen.
Wow.
And then we cut to the other member of the Doom Patrol who doesn't do anything because she's in a coma. Rhea.
Poor Rhea.
And we see on the screen that she has a lot of brainwave activity going on.
Mm.
And that's the end of the three-parter.
Yes. So, yeah, as you said, the saving of the world was a little bit anticlimactic.
But, yeah.
You know, it was still a cool ending, how it all wrapped up. And then it leaves us with, something's going to happen with Rhea in the next story. But, yeah, Willoughby Kipling, interesting character.
And does he come back? I can't remember.
He does. He has a few other appearances in later issues. I do recall one where he ended up losing the flesh of his arm.
Ah, that's right.
And he basically had I think his arm was basically sort of burning with ghostly, unnatural flames for the entire story. We'll have to do a Willoughby episode.
Yeah. He's very cool.
Yeah.
So, good Doom Patrol, this stuff. It's very crazy. It's got the typical Grant Morrison anticlimactic ending.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Where everything that is, dramatic is suddenly undercut.
Mm.
Yeah. And the team come up with solutions that, are very out of left field.
Yeah.
But it doesn't bug you.
I think
the structure of these stories is there's so much thrown at you that the solution can be thrown at you in the same way.
That's right. There's so much going on. I mean, the team is split up in, the center of the story, and there's so much going on and so much weird. It's like I said, that Morrison ramps the weirdness right up in this storyline. But yet it still flows really well, and it's really interesting what he's doing there. And as you said, a lot of the new, evil, interesting stuff is just like thrown away, a panel after it appears.
Yeah.
So.
I really liked the issue when it first came out, and I actually wrote a letter to the comic about it, and it got published in issue 36.
Well, we will have to read that one out.
All right, and so I focused on the anagrams that were in issue 32.
Uh-huh.
And I said, "Dear Yoga Runt, Doom Patrol number 32 was for me the best issue yet. Not only did we have the mind-twisting ideas of Starring Moron and the exquisite art of Archie Cards, but one of my favourite hobbies, the anagram, finally got some attention. Sincere thanks, Sick Upon the Lawn."
Wow.
So Yoga Runt is an anagram of Art Young.
Mm-hmm.
Grant Morrison is Starring Moron. And Archie Cards is Richard Case.
Right. Well done.
And my name is Sick Upon the Lawn, if you use my middle name.
Well, I'll be using that name for a long time to come now.
Yeah.
Wow.
No biggie, I just had a letter in Doom Patrol.
Oh, yes. As Chris Sabella said, rare air. Rare air, Paul. Excellent.
Okay, we'll leave it there for talking about Doom Patrol issues. This week on the Mailbag of Doom, we asked people what comic arc or run had the most satisfying ending. And we heard from a bunch of people. We heard from Mike Levine, who's at Biz Michael, and he said, "Why the Last Man?" Which is a great comic. You read that?
Yes, yes. I was getting that in singles when it was coming out. Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very good stuff. Yes. We also heard from Kevin, who is at Red Socks Red Shoes on Twitter, and he said, "Starman. It has to be Starman."
Kevin is a very old online mate of mine from the Starman message board days.
Wow.
Yeah, so we used to get on there all the time and talk about Starman as it was coming out each month. So, good friend, Kevin. We heard from alias Saul Bishop, who's at Arch Enemy Comics, and he said, "Transmetropolitan. Old Spider Jerusalem."
Mm-hmm. I've got to admit, I have not read that, nor Starman, so.
Oh.
Yeah. Got a bit of catching up to do, I guess. Yeah. If I want to be cool like all you cool kids. Jesse at She-Hulk is Boss on Twitter. She said, Fearless Defenders by Cullen Bunn and Will Sliney. Wonderful ending. Annabelle gets the girl, kicks butt, ladies save the day, and it's funny.
I've not read those.
I have read those, and I can concur on all those points.
We heard from Ken Godbison, who's at Ken Godbison the Third, and he said Full Metal Alchemist, which I have not read.
I know it's a manga about two brothers, and they've got kind of metal shape-shifting powers, and one of them is trapped inside a metal body, so... But, yeah. Again, another one I've not read, but, you know, that's cool. Imperator Camacho, at Camacho Jess, she said Lock and Key. All the feels and everything was tied up nicely.
Yeah, have you read that one? Comic. Yeah, I've read all of Lock and Key. It's great.
I have to give that another try. I will admit I've only read the first trade.
So. It's got the best thing going for it. It's finite.
Okay.
We heard from Mike Howes, who's the real Roscoe on Twitter, and he said Johns' Green Lantern. Yeah, that's a great big long run that tied up not very nicely.
Yes. Ben D at Punk Rock Sellout. He said, I don't want you to actually read my honest answer on the show, but I think I'm on record as saying Sweet Tooth had his favourite ending.
What do you think his honest answer is?
I can't remember what it was. Probably something like Day Batman. Trip. I don't know.
Anyway. All right. We heard from Daniel Walden, and he said Starman. And then he said Rom, Preacher, Next Wave. I've read 3 out of 4 of those.
I've read 1.
Which one have you read, Preacher?
Preacher. Yes. Yeah. I'll actually go ahead and say, I'll say Preacher had a really satisfying ending for me. It was, for me, it was just a great series throughout. And yeah, it wrapped up so well and just, yeah, oh, it's, I should really get around to rereading Preacher one day. It's that good. Oh, so good. Simon Dixon, he said Lock and Key. They tied things up in such a brilliant way.
It is a great run, Lock and Key. We heard Rift, Rifty, and he said, Why the Last Man was great and Geoff Johns' Green Lantern has been awesome. So... Yeah, they're both great.
Chris Hogan at Unlikely Nerd. He actually gave us a few different answers, but then he said, wait, final answer, the end of Hickman's Fantastic Four. That was his answer, and we had to ignore the others. So I've read.
You read those?
I read most of it. I've got most of the trades. I think I read the final one. It was a while ago.
Yeah, we heard from Steve T-Shirt Meter, who's at T-Park Met, and he said, the end of Alan Moore's Miracle Man run, where Miracle Man just wonders. Okay. I'm not up to that yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Rich T. Wee Link Vim at Ostrakos 1 said All-Star Superman.
Yeah, that's a great run, that one.
Mm-hmm.
Good ending.
We also heard from Doug Zawisa, who said Kingdom Come. That world ends on the last page of the collected edition for me and never bled into anything else. Which is what... You want sometimes, you want it to just, yeah, as you say, end finitely and have that be that. Yes.
We also heard from Karthik Karkarella, who gave us a few. He said, Amazing Spider-Man, December 2012, just in time for my birthday. Uncanny X-Force from 2012 and Batman Odyssey from 2012. So I've read Uncanny X-Force. That was the Remender run. That was really good.
Okay.
Yeah. Not read the others.
Nor have I. Actually, I tell a lie. I've gone back in time, not literally, like physically back in time, but I've backtracked with the Amazing Spider-Man trades because those who know me know that I kind of got on board Spider-Man with Superior Spider-Man, which got me hooked. And then I went back and got the preceding trades. So, our final response to the question of the week was actually on our Facebook page, and it came from Richie O'Hara Beeman, and he said, Transmetropolitan. I can think of some great endings, Kieran Gillen's Journey into Mystery Arc in particular. And then he had a little sob face. But Transmetropolitan had it all and left him with a huge grin. Hurrah!
Cool. Yeah, that's good, Transmet.
Mm-hmm.
My answer is Hitman. I think Hitman ends superbly. And I don't want to spoil the ending for those of you who don't know the ending.
No. Yes, and you're probably going to pick up the Section 8 miniseries, which comes out this week too, I dare say.
I probably am, yeah. Looking forward to that.
Yes. Yeah. We also had a letter in the mailbag this week from Kevin, who is Ostrakos1 on Twitter. And he said he just wanted to drop us a quick line. As he said before, he's tickled our podcast exists, as he's been into the Doom Patrol ever since he first met Robot Man and Mento back in New Teen Titans. He says, I'm slowly making my way through the old episodes, and today was your discussion about the Painting That Ate Paris storyline. I thought I'd share a quick tidbit. Richard Case lives here in North Carolina and is a yearly guest at HeroesCon. 2 years ago, he did a panel discussing his work on Doom Patrol with Grant. As you can imagine, it was pretty fascinating to listen to him talk about all the crazy shit he had to draw for the book. He specifically mentioned the design of Mr. Nobody, and Richard said that Grant wanted him to look like someone you see out of the corner of your eye, but isn't there when you look more closely, and I think he captures that as well as any artist possibly could. He also mentioned that both he and Grant came up with all the ephemera that fills the room when we first meet the character. Kevin says he's going to talk to the guy who schedules the panels and see if they happen to record it by any chance, and if he can get a copy somehow, he will definitely send it along. Richard is going to be back at HeroesCon this year. He always has these nice prints of the team, and he's going to be there along with Matthew Clark. So if he gets any good Doom Patrol art, he will share it. Thanks, and keep up the great work. Regards, Kevin.
Wouldn't that be fantastic to go to HeroesCon?
Yeah, it'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. Pretty what are we cool. doing next week, Mike?
Well, next week we're starting a bit of a break.
Why?
Because I'm going to HeroesCon.
What?
Yes.
What?
Surely this cannot be a surprise. This cannot be news.
Yeah, Mike is living the dream.
Yep.
He's going to Carolina for HeroesCon.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Where there's a lot of Doom Patrol artists.
Well, specifically, yes, Richard Case will be there. Matthew Clark will be there. Joe Staton, who did the Showcase Presents storyline back in the 70s, he will also be there.
Wow.
So, just a little bit excited by that, you know.
Wow. I'm going to go to work.
Are you?
Yeah.
Look, I'll do my best to keep you updated on and anything that might happen there. You know?
Yeah. So we'll be taking 2 weeks off while Mike is having a fabulous time over there. Mm-hmm. And because you don't want to hear depressed Paul filling in for Mike at all.
Look, anyway, when I get back, we'll have lots to talk about, I'm sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll have to get it all secondhand.
Wow.
I'm not jealous. It's okay. It's okay, Mike. You go have a good time.
I will.
Don't worry about me. Don't worry.
Of course I will. Of course I will. I'll check in on you every day.
Yeah. So once again, if you want to get in touch with us on Twitter, we're at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And you could be like Kevin and have your email read out. Mm-hmm. And we've got the Waiting for Doom Facebook page, which is on Facebook, Waiting for Doom, or something like that.
That's it exactly, yes.
Awesome. Well, Mike, you have a fantastic time.
And I will.
Travel safe.
Thank you.
Yeah, and don't drive on the wrong side of the road.
I'm not going to drive at all. I'm on holidays, dude. That's work.
Cool. And we'll catch you all soon.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Bye.